We spend the next day playing tourists. Tower Bridge and the Rosetta Stone at the British Museum, popping up out of underground stations like subterranean animals after a long, cold winter. For lunch, we slip into a tiny corner shop and pick up cheddar cheese sandwiches with mustard and pickles, on bread so crusty you could break a tooth trying to eat it. I like traveling with Ian, I think again as we post up on a bench in Covent Garden to eat them. In spite of all my careful planning, he's open to a kind of wandering, with a willingness to sit in one place for an hour at a time and watch the world go by. "We're not seeing anything," I protest when he suggests running across the street for ice cream.
"Take a breath, General,"
Ian tells me, nodding at the crowded plaza.
"We're seeing plenty."
"Jerk," I tease. Although truthfully, my new vacation sandals are rubbing a blister on my pinky toe, and I'm happy to have a break. In any case, it's not like he's wrong. When I follow his gaze, I spy a delivery man unloading a shipment of flowers from a truck and loading it into the service entrance of a nearby restaurant. I watch a pack of skateboarders in brightly colored t-shirts zipping through the throng. Across the street is a newsstand packed with gossip magazines, their covers splashed with lurid photos of Sabrina Hudson's latest nightclub meltdown. And I frown for a second, squinting to read the headlines. Sabrina Hudson was a huge TV star back when I was in middle school, and there was even chatter about her possibly playing Emily Green in my mom's Driftwood movie. But for the last year or so, she's been on what seems like one long bender, getting fired from film projects and arrested for a DUI, and embroiled in public knockdown and dragouts with one sketchy boyfriend after another.
"I used to have a huge crush on Sabrina Hudson," Ian tells me now, nodding at the magazine racks with a grimace. "I mean, before she turned into a giant train wreck, clearly."
"You and everybody else," I tease, though I'm still peering distractedly at the tabloids. God, it must be awful to crash and burn like that in front of the whole entire world. "Okay," I say finally, smiling at him and reaching for my phone to check the schedule. "Let's get going." In the afternoon, we wander through the cluster of bookstores on Charing Cross Road, all low ceilings and narrow aisles, and the smell of old paper and must rare first editions locked safely into glass front cabinets, and fusty shopkeepers like something out of Harry Potter, keeping a watchful eye on their wares. A bookstore cat darts across the end of the aisle, a flash of white paws and Bengal stripes, there and gone again. It's the kind of place I probably would have found boring a year ago, but Ian is so clearly in heaven that I find myself getting excited about it too, the two of us digging through the messy, overcrowded stacks with the enthusiasm of contestants on some kind of ultra-dorky game show. "You're not going to have room for all of those in your backpack," I warn him finally, eyeing the growing haul tucked under his arm. Ian collects vintage contemporaries paperbacks from the 80s, the kind with tacky paint-by-numbers art on their covers and bright bands of color along their spines. I've seen them lined up on the bookshelves in his apartment, forming a rainbow nearly narcotic in its orderliness. He shakes his head, looking confident.
"Oh, I'll make room," he promises.
"You will, huh?" I ask, charmed. He raises his eyebrows in reply, then sets the books on a nearby shelf and kisses me. Broad chest and beer-tasting tongue, and both hands on my face. I love Ian's hands. They're oddly aristocratic compared to the rest of him, long and lean, with bitten-down nails that are all college dude. Watching him hold a pencil always strikes me as stupidly dear.
"This," he mutters against my mouth, "is how I want to die."
I laugh, flattening my palms against his t-shirt. I can feel his heart tapping steadily away underneath the cotton. Bookstores are holy sites for Ian. He's a double major in English and secondary education, the only guy in his teaching cohort. Back when we first started dating, he used to bring me books instead of flowers, leaving them on my desk and in stacks at my door like offerings. Stephen King, Jane Austen, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. I've never been a huge reader, truthfully. Not to mention the fact that after the Driftwood debacle, I wanted to stay as far away from my mom's career as humanly possible. But I didn't want him to think I was a moron. And in the end, I was surprised by how much I enjoyed them. Dipping into a dozen different worlds in the sterile quiet of my dorm room. I wanted to know all the authors he'd fallen in love with. I wanted to read everything he'd read.